I'm Umesh Kulkarni with ClearToPay, and today I'll be presenting EMV 101. I'll start off with, I think the payment industry is pretty optimistic, and I'll tell you why. I opened up my credit card statement the other day, and it said you have an outstanding balance. Well, that's great. I think I have an outstanding balance. You should see what the balance is going to look like after my visit to Las Vegas next week. So it may be a super outstanding balance. I wish I had a wealthy uncle who could just write me a check and take care of my super outstanding balance, but I don't. Have to go through the different steps necessary to reduce my balance over time. And I think the way I would correlate that to what we're going through in EMV is kind of similar, right? You want to build the disciplines in place in order to have the reduction in your balances, or in EMV, the ability to combat fraud. You just don't have one way to do it. It's a series of different things that you do in order to combat the, fight the bad guys. EMV is one among them. Bruce mentioned a couple of others. We've got tokenization. We've got different things that are coming in the works. We introduced PCI in the process. So there's a lot of different things that we're doing as an industry to reduce the impact of fraud on our customers and ourselves. Show of hands on who knows what EMV stands for, okay? Anybody who doesn't? Okay. So I think EMV 101 for me, this is going to be a pretty easy presentation, I think, because I'm going to be giving you a lot of information that you probably already know. But what we're going to cover in the session today is basically laying down the foundations for what the rest of my colleagues are going to be talking about, building blocks for the implementation, testing, and best practices that you will get into the meat of those things, and I think you'll find those very interesting. But in order to get to that, these are the building blocks. What is EMV? The benefits of EMV, some of which were covered already, but I think it's important to kind of reinforce some of the things that we're going to be going over. The differentiation in terminology. We've got a lot of different things that get bantered around in terms of in the payment industry. What is a POS? What is a PIN pad? What is an ATM? What is a kiosk? So all these things play a role in the way transactions are processed, acquired in our in electronic commerce. EMV and applications, EMV transaction flow, security, changes to our environment, merchant training, and lessons learned are some of the things that we're going to be going over, and I think my fonts are running over as well, but we'll cover those things. EMV is, the acronym stands for, the original acronym, let me back up a second, is EuroPay, MasterCard, and Visa. And so if you think just in terms of the amount of time that EMV Co. has been together putting a smart card solution in place, we're talking quite a bit of time. Of course, it's nowhere close to the 50 plus years that we've seen Magstripe, but definitely the adoption and the relevance of what EMV brings to the payment landscape is quite significant. EMV Co. I think it was mentioned by Kathy a little bit while ago as far as what the EMF does. You have to have a central body to be able to bring all the knowledge and information together. One of EMV Co's responsibilities or mandates is that there's so many moving parts within EMV. If you think about the entire payments landscape, that starts maybe from what happens on a card, the design of a card, the interaction of a circuit on the card, what electronic frequencies it needs to carry, down to a terminal, a POS terminal, an ATM terminal, what is the interaction between those, all the definitions of the transaction interaction between a terminal and their acquiring host and the networks, all of those things have to be defined. And you need to have a body that has the capability of standardizing all of the information so that as the solution providers go out and implement EMV, you have some consistency and, more importantly, interoperability. So you don't go into one market and it works in a certain way, and then take that card into a different location and it has a completely different acceptance parameter. So that's one of the key roles of EMV Co, is to facilitate the global interoperability of EMV. It's a open and industry-wide specification. We have various different components to EMV. If you go to the website, you'll see specifications ranging from, as I mentioned, the IC card level, the chip card level, all the way to the operating system of the card. Bruce mentioned that UnionPay International has recently joined as a full member, but now EMV Co, the name has remained, but when we look at the full members of EMV Co, you'll notice that there are the major card brands in the world, from Visa, MasterCard, Amex, Discover, JCB, which is the Japanese card, as well as UPI. Benefits of EMV. First and foremost, we're talking about protection and counterfeit fraud. We also mentioned there are other things that we're going to bring in, that are going to bring in to help the fraud process, but first and foremost, counterfeit fraud. The other thing that EMV does that MAG doesn't do is give you a little bit more control over the risk parameters, so you as an issuer or a merchant have the ability to define how you want to interact with that particular card and that merchant, with that customer. So if you are a low risk merchant or a low risk issuer, depending on the profile of the recipient of the card, you can make certain decisions. Previously on the MAG, you were quite limited in what you could do, what type of decisions you could take with the MagStripe card. The integrity of the transaction can be validated digitally, whereas in the MAG world, you have the Track 2 data, the Track 1 data has gone on online, and you have the ability to do the transaction. You have DES, you have triple DES to look at the transaction detail to encrypt it, but you really don't have that level of interaction between an ability to query the transaction, the details of it, to the level that EMV provides you. And that's a significant benefit as you're trying to manage and mitigate your risk of a particular transaction. Say, suppose what rules you want to set if you don't have the ability to go online. Those are some of the dynamic elements of EMV that you don't have in a MagStripe environment. As a victim of a lost card recently, definitely wish that the cards that I had, that I lost, had a chip on it, because having one on there definitely has the ability to reduce the ability to have counterfeit fraud. And I think more and more cards are being issued. The numbers are quite significant when you start looking at them. Acceptance in the U.S. is definitely going to go significantly high. We've got a lot of international commerce, cross-border commerce. Mexico is transitioning into EMV. We already have our neighbors in the north in EMV. So it's just going to be part of what we're going to be living with. Border states, where I am in Arizona, got a lot of cross-border traffic over here as well. So I think we're just going to see a proliferation of EMV cards shortly in the market. Terminology, when we start looking at the terms used in our industry, we've got things like chip-enabled card, chip card, chip and pin. Basically, a lot of different terminology for essentially several types of contactless cards. And we'll go over the three types of cards that we are most familiar with: magnetic stripe cards, contact chip cards, and contactless cards. We're all familiar with MagStripe cards. I think since the 60s, we've seen these cards in the market. We're very familiar with them. But when you look at the amount of data that can actually get carried on a MagStripe card, it's quite limited. And what you can do with the MagStripe card, it's more of a one-way data going out of the card, nothing coming back into it. But yes, it is inexpensive. 50 some odd years of being in circulation does reduce the amount of cost that a MagStripe has. But in comparison, a smart card certainly has a lot more capability. And we can go into a lot of the capabilities, not only from risk, but also has the ability to have multiple applications on there, not just a payment application. You could have loyalty applications. So a lot of cross use of a smart card as possible. And I think we're starting to see a trend where it may be a EMV or a chip card only environment versus a MAG environment. Canada, as Bruce mentioned, with their timeline for 2015. I've got sort of a date of 2014 there. Don't look at it. Don't ask me for my picks for the Final Four either, because I'm not very accurate with my prediction. And also, just over time, it's going to phase out. It's probably going to be a few more years yet before we can see the end of the MAG stripe. The different type of chip cards. We've got the contact chip, right? We've got the your basic plastic card embedded with a microprocessor on it, right? It's definitely more secure than a magnetic card, and it's difficult to clone. If you, we all know if you lost a card, it's very easy to take the mag, and you have the ability to clone it and start using it. Versus on a chip card, there are different authentication methods, and just taking a card and duplicating the chip is not easy to do. And of course, it's also more expensive today. It will come down in price over time. And it has the ability to have various different forms of data protection for the consumer. Access methods, you have encryption, you have PIN information that you can put on there to protect the identity. Then also when a card is actually presented to a terminal, there's a lot more authentication that happens between the card and the terminal, whereas in a MAG, you just do a swipe and you're done. But the level of dialogue between an actual card and a terminal is quite significant that can help in reduction of fraud. All right, contactless. Probably a bit, we've heard of the Apple Pay application in the past week and a half or so, has really taken the industry by storm. But contactless payments have been around for quite some time. If you think back, for those of you who used to have a mobile key fob for the gas pumps, you have the ability to pay with a key fob before. But what we're really talking about here is contactless payment using the ability to have a payment infrastructure, EMV, to make it a secure contactless payment. The basic engineering of contactless has not changed too much. You still have an RFID that's going to have a radio frequency to communicate with the card acceptance device, exchange data, and pass the payment information that will then get sent on to the processing entity. Now, there can be two forms of contactless payment. One is on a card, or it can be in a mobile device. Okay, so you're seeing the Apple Pay example, but also the card brands have issued dual cards where they're contactless as well as contact. So you can do the tap and go as well as put the card into the reader depending on what the merchant supports and what your card supports. When we start talking about EMV chip cards and the EMV standards, we break them down by the particular card brand and the name of their specific implementation or application. For Visa, the acronym we use is VSDC, and it's Visa's EMV specification. MasterCard's is called M-Chip. American Express, sometimes a little bit harder acronym to voice out, but JSmart, DPAS, and UICS are the main ones that we're going to see in this market. Unless you're an issuer of UPI, you probably are not going to be at that level of integration with a UPI. For a lot of you in the room, this is kind of preaching the obvious here. What is a POS terminal? But the important thing that I wanted to bring up with this particular slide is the different terminologies used with POS. One's a pin pad, a semi-integrated a POS, or a fully integrated POS. the important thing here for the ISVs, the VARs, and the people in the room doing a lot of the integrations are to remember that whatever the POS infrastructure is, we're really talking about the interface between the acceptance device, the payment application, and the kernel. So wherever that resides is the focal point of what we're trying to exercise and do the implementation. Because as you start doing your development, talk to your processors and your development community, your relationship manager with the card brands, because your certifications are going to have a significance based upon what integration point you're going to be implementing EMV. So wherever there's an influence on the payment application, there is a requirement to do a test with that particular application. So if you're having new releases that may not interface with that payment application, then you have to verify with your acquirer or processor that you don't need to do a complete test. And we'll go over that a little bit more in detail later on. But that's the definition of what the term POS means. Again, ATM, stating the obvious here, but if you think of ATM, think of it not only as the ATM machine, but also an ATM type form factor. It could be a kiosk, it could be a ticketed machine, it could be a fare collection point. So all of these are non-standard POS form factors where you're going to be interfacing with a chip card or you're going to be doing application development to accept payments at that particular device. Are there any device, other than Randy here, any device manufacturers in the room, people writing software for specific devices? So this is kind of going down a level or two from where your point of integration is for EMV. What we're talking about here is the kind of things that EMV code does is type approvals. Okay, what is a type approval? You are at a point where you've received a terminal that has already gone through what they call a level 1 and level 2 certification. Okay, so the terminal manufacturer has to present to EMV Co. the device. The device is going to be tested for both the physical capability that it conforms to EMV Co. specifications, as well as the software conformance to EMV Co. standards. Once they go through the specific certification, a certification letter is presented on the website that will define what exactly has been certified, what version has been certified. So before you write your terminal applications, before you do your certifications, make sure you work with the terminal manufacturer and obtain this letter so that it sets up a baseline. And as you do your certifications with some of the brands as well, one of the requirements is to make sure that you have the letter of the LOA from EMV Co. So I'm going to gloss over this since none of you guys are at that level. Rest assured you're going to be working on a device that's EMV Co. approved. All right, I think what we're talking about here is application identifiers, okay, AIDs. And this is going to be important in your development cycle because of the fact that each card can have multiple application identifiers, okay, AIDs. And as you're developing your application, you're going to have different phases in your software which has to go through and select a particular AID because there has to be an AID match between what's on a card and what the terminal supports. Okay? And all of these matching criteria are defined within the tests that you're going to go through as part of the EMV migration process. So on a card, as this indicates, you can have a debit application, a credit application, prepaid application, but each of them is going to have their unique application identifier. And there is an example of a what a credit application identifier for Visa looks like versus a debit application identifier. So if you haven't seen one of these yet, you'll see a lot of them defined in your specifications. So, all right, so I mentioned that you have to have commonality between the AIDs on the card and the terminal before the transaction can get to the next level. In your development, you will also have various different type of application selection. You can have an automatic application selection, or there's prioritization that you'll have to pay attention to as you're developing your interfaces. So the way debit works is going to be slightly different than the way credit works, but pay attention to that because that's very important. We've got the Durbin Amendments, which will require multiple debit AIDs. So make sure that as you go through your development cycle, you're paying attention to how those things are selected. A little bit more information on the structure of the EMV environment. So it's like a layer cake, right? You've got some base foundations for how the operating system is defined, and upon that operating system, you've got the different applications. So if you look at EMV Co has some basic fundamental requirements of what a transaction needs to be defined, the device needs to be defined, and what's on a card itself. Then upon that, each of the card brands has their own specific specifications for the chip. And upon that, you have each payment application for the brands is going to be unique. So as you do the development and testing, you'll notice that the requirements are going to differ from one brand to the next. And when you do the testing, you'll have different type of tests that each of the brands are going to require in order to support the various business rules that have been established for that particular brand. This is it's like an engineering flowchart, but the main purpose of this one is to kind of give you a differentiation between MAG and EMV. MAG, Stripe is like a single guy, right? It doesn't talk a whole lot. It's got one conversation, yes, that's it. This is like a dialogue between married people. So you've got, okay, hey, do you want to do this? No, I'm not. You want to get steak? No, not quite. So it's basically, there's a lot of yes and no's in EMV. It's very methodical. It's very logical. And a lot of flags. There's so basically what we're doing is we're going through a decision tree. Okay, when you think about it and you look at the way it's been done, it's really nice. It's beautiful. Application selection. As soon as you put the card in, hey, does the card work? Does it not work? Then if it doesn't work, I go on this not so happy path. If it works, then I'm going to go on this happy path. I'm going to go online and do this transaction, or I'm going to do something else. But along the way, you know, there are checks and balances. What does the card say? Is the card happy with what's going on? Is the terminal happy with what's going on? What are my risk parameters on my card? What are the risk parameters that have been programmed to the terminal? So there's a negotiation that takes place throughout this, and it's all done in milliseconds. It is so fast. There's a lot of dialogue. I think Aiden will show you in a little bit what a typical MAG transaction looks like, the data, versus what you're going to find in EMV. And you guys are going to be influencing quite a bit of that as you're programming the terminal side and doing the application development. There is a lot of information that goes back and forth, but it's very logical and sensible. And you've got a team of people who are experts in helping you navigate that path. So, yeah, just remember single guy and married couple. You live a lot longer as a married couple, I read. So I think EMV is going to last long. EMV security verification methods, cardholder verification. In MAG, we don't have any cardholder verification, really. When you look at it, and you may have a picture on your card, and sometimes the clerk will look at it, sometimes they won't. And you know, I've taken my wife's card and used it, and we look like each other over time, but not quite as close. But online PIN, right? It's very much like what you're used to in the debit card world. You put your card in, you put your PIN number in, and then off it goes for validation to the issuer. Offline PIN is strictly between the card and the terminal. There's nothing authentication message that goes online, right? There's a signature, and also there's, depending on what industry you're in, if you're in the quick service restaurant business, then there may not even be any authentication. A lot of these are defined by the risk parameters that I talked about before, between as a merchant and also as a card issuer, what you want to set up. Okay. Corporate card accounts may have different type of parameters on there, locations and things like that, that they want to specify where you can or cannot go. Chip and signature, depending again on the card, the risk threshold, you may be asked to sign a receipt at the end to prove that you are in fact the card holder and you've done this transaction. Chip and PIN, your ID is verified by a specific PIN. And there is a match between what's on the PIN, what's on the chip, and what is going to be authorized. Okay, pretty straightforward there as well. Now, we've got two components you'll hear about the cardholder authentication, and then you're going to hear about the transaction authorization. So you need to keep those two separated as you were talking about in EMV. You've got online authorization and you have offline authorization. In some markets outside of the US, there's quite a bit of offline authorization. But in the US, because of the comms infrastructure that we have, majority of the transactions are online preferred, okay? So transactions are gonna go online to your credit card company or your bank for authorization. Very similar to what happens today in the online environment. Your PIN is validated, as well as Bruce mentioned, a cryptogram that goes up that packages some information from the transaction, validates it, decrypts the cryptogram, sends back an authorization cryptogram. And if it's declining it, sends back something else. You'll see later on that our favorite field 39, data element 39 equals 00 versus 30 or 51 or 76 is no longer the case. We're going to have like an AAC or a TC and all these different type of new response codes that you'll fall in love with. But they're all well documented. So. And I think Aiden's going to be talking about some of these as well. All right. Now, authentication messages or methods. An ARQC is called an application request cryptogram. Okay, that's the question that goes up to the authorizing host to say, hey, I want this information. I want to buy these type of goods and services. Validate it for me. So the ARQC goes up. It makes sure that the source where it came from is accurate. The contents of the message have not been altered. So all of that's done in the on the back end. Once everything is validated, the host or the issuer is going to respond with a application response cryptogram, ARPC. Because they are unique, that's one of the things that is a plus point or a benefit of using EMV in payments. So the ARQC and ARPC validation is an important step. And as you're doing your development, that cryptogram, you'll be spending some time in validating that cryptogram. Okay? And while you're doing that, make sure you've got the right key set up. And a lot of times you have a different key set up on the chip. You have a different key set up on your host, and when there's a mismatch, those cryptograms are not going to work. But mind you that there are certain tests where you are going to fail a cryptogram. So if you do, just make sure you refer back to the tests and say that, is it a test that is meant to fail versus am I forcing a failure? We put this together just to show you how influential you guys are, okay? If you think about where you are entering the payment, you're making application changes on the terminal or the store controller level, right? But the information you put into the system is going to have an effect on various different environments in the chain. Your merchant processor has to take your information and make sure that they're able to handle it and process it properly. If you've got risk management parameters that are changing on the host, those need to be validated as well. If you've got certain instructions for customer service, my card's not working, what do I do? All of those things have to be translated from just programming language to customer service language. What do I do? What are the decisions I take at the help desk? Marketing, if they're going to be introducing new programs or going to be talking about the benefits of these risk parameters that have been put in, all of these things have a downstream impact. And so everybody kind of has to work together on implementing these applications. Right now we're in a cycle that we're used to of biannual releases, and then we make those changes and then off we go. But I think in the first couple of cycles you'll notice that you'll have a lot more involvement with other sides of the businesses as well. We talked about the in the previous slide, the terminal applications on the ATM application. Any ATM acquirers or drivers in this group, or mainly POS? Okay. We talked about risk management again. You'll see a lot of the same terminology reappear on the slides, but whether you're how you're going to support fallback. Again, when we're talking about fallbacks, you've got to remember that the way each of the brands supports fallbacks is going to be different. So when you do your development, don't think of, for example, fallback as a generic implementation. Make sure you follow the rules of each of the brands, because also the testing requirements for that particular functionality is going to be different by each of the brands. Okay. From a merchant perspective, EMV brings a new and more flexible technology, right? You have the capability of supporting multiple applications. You have offline capability, depending on how you want to set your risk parameters. You can do various different cardholder verification methods if you want to support a PIN, if you want to support a signature. Those are some of the things that you can support. New type of transactions and card verification requirements will require different type of programming changes, as well as education to the tellers. And I think this is an important component of the conversations that we're having in our EMV forum, is the education. Sometimes what's happening is I, as a cardholder, since I've done a few transactions, I tell the teller, I think I have to put the card in here. So sometimes it's you. Because you're a part of the industry, you may be a little bit more well-versed in using the technology than some of the clerks. Particularly now in holiday season, we're going to get a lot of new hires. Some of them may not know how this technology is going to work. A lot of it depends on what has been, how they've been trained. But if there are processors in the room, I know there are a few of you, sometimes the burden of responsibility of communicating all of this is fallen on a lot of people, not only from the vendors, the card brands, the retailers, and everybody. So it's going to be a community effort to get the word out. And I think over time we're going to get to how this is how each retailer is going to handle this. There's going to be a migration over time. For people who are so used to just taking a card and swiping it, especially if it's an unattended terminal, you just go, swipe, take your stuff, and start walking. Versus now, you may need additional people to kind of handhold and say, hey, you need to put this in, you need to wait a certain number of seconds, don't take the card out. What happens if you take the card out? So part of your negative testing that we would encourage some of you guys to think about, and not just part of the card brand certifications, is to go through and force certain erroneous transactions. Take the card out in the middle of a transaction, see what happens. What is your system behaving the way you would expect it to, or is it abending and blue screening and all the different type of things that we don't want to see an application do? What is the impact on the settlement of the transaction? Make sure that you not only look at the auth side of it, but also the settlement side of it as well. So it's you're testing the end-to-end environment. So make sure as you're developing it, you have some of those considerations in mind. Some of the encounters that we've seen in the business, and one of my colleagues, Joe, here, will be talking a little bit more about what he's found in the U.S. market. I've put these here just as examples of even experienced markets, environments that have had EMV for a number of years. It's not perfect. You're going to have erroneous conditions, but just pay some attention to the type of things that we've gone here. I mentioned fallbacks, and I think that's probably the most logical thing that could go wrong, right? Because somebody's curious, they're not used to leaving their card in the reader, they may pull things out. So what is the decisioning that you're going to do? Are you going to educate the teller to put are you going to put a prompt on your terminal to re-enter the card, or is that going to just show up as an error? So as you're programming your devices, make sure you pay particular attention to some of the use conditions of what happens when a card is not detected or a card is taken out early, okay? What happens when a transaction is not able to complete? And also what we've seen is mismatch between what the terminal capability is versus what it's programmed for, right? So if it's a specific type of a device that also has a different type of, if it's an attended terminal versus an unattended terminal, all of those parameters play a role in how your transaction is going to be accepted and processed. We talked about this as far as offline PIN requirements. In the U.S., majority of the implementations are online. There's not many, I don't believe, that are going to go offline for transaction authentication. I just mentioned the false fallbacks and the incorrect terminal profiles. There's a lot of words here. It kind of describes a scenario when you have the if you're going to be sharing these slides with some of your colleagues, since they haven't heard the anecdotes, they can read through them. And it's an example of some of the type of errors that we found in the field, where the terminal profiles don't match, or the fallback occurs when a transaction is meant to be an EMV card but goes into a MAG environment. You'll see a lot of this information. Tags are mentioned in EMV. You'll get very familiar with this. You'll hear of field 55 or data element 55 used quite liberally in EMV, because that's the sort of the home place where all the EMV information is buried. So it's almost like the magic field. That, along with field 22, which is your POS code. So you have various different POS entry capabilities. That, along with the various tags, the cryptogram information data, 9F27, this will become part of your vocabulary here shortly, and you'll be spitting these out before you know it. The unpredictable number, you know, they'll ask, what is the unpredictable number? I don't know, it's unpredictable. So as part of us on the help desk, we encounter a lot of those. We're asked to give some specific answers to those, but we have to go through various different calculations and things like that. So that the security element of EMV can't be understated again. Application interchange profile, Some of you may have come across these and they may mean something to you. Some of you may be on the business side and you'll probably hear these terms used. Well, at least now you're familiar with some of the tags and terms. Okay. But important is Field 55 is like a baton in a relay. And it's important that you as either terminal programmers or merchants or processors are at various stages of that relay. And it's important that you verify that you're able to carry the data all the way from the card to the terminal, terminal to your store controller, or then on to the processor all the way to the issuer. So depending on where on that transaction life cycle you reside, you have various different things that you're going to do, various different message formats that you're going to interact with. So when you're on the host-to-host, the processor-to-card brand side, you're going to be more on the ISO 8583 message format. Between your terminal and device handler, you may have fixed formats, proprietary formats, Petro. You may have all the retail applications, so the various hosts that you're going to integrate with. So, and one thing is the way Field 55 is defined for processor XYZ and how it's going to be transported may not necessarily be the same for processor PQR. Okay, so just because you know how to handle Field 55 does not necessarily mean you can do it the same way for everybody. So there are unique attributes to each of those, and pay particularly close attention to all of them. Okay, there is a lot to do, but if you have started, that's great. If you haven't started, jump in, and you'll realize that you're probably not too far from becoming experts. And if you need help, there's a lot of people in the industry, people in the room, people outside who have the ability to help you guys out. But I think the important thing is get started. And I think you may be surprised how much you already know. Your suppliers, your partners will have a wealth of information. EMV Co. has a lot of information on the website. As well as the EMF, so encourage you guys to distribute that information amongst yourself, share this information with your peers, and don't underestimate the testing time, because you know there are certain deadlines that have been provided in the industry, so work backwards and make sure that you give enough time for the testing and certification process. Development is going to take you an iterative process, but don't skimp on that end, because the testing requirements are very well defined, and it's not something, if you haven't gone through the process before, there's a little bit of a learning curve, and so make sure that as you do it, you devote enough time for all of this. And as I said, work with people who've if you need help, with experts who've done it before, there are lots of them available, so I encourage you to get started. Okay? With that, I think we're at the end of this section.